Once upon a time, on Prompted Writing Podcast, Erin writes a poem about the world's worst interview. I write the opening to a film about a Shakespearean celebrity gossip. And Bella proves that jellyfish deserve stories too. Plus, we discuss how to open a story. Bella, hit the theme tune. So this week's theme is how to open stories, and our prompt is taken from story dice. So my mum brought me some story dice, and I gave them a roll, and what came out was a star, a speech bubble, an aeroplane, a bumblebee, a learner driver symbol, an eye, a quotation mark, a turtle, an alien, one for Erin there, and a Ferris wheel.
The alien was the best one. It was just made my day.
I was surprised at Erin's restraint.
Thank you, Bella.
It was powerful restraint on Erin's part.
I do try.
I just wrote an entire piece about the alien.
I didn't write an entire piece about the alien. I was good.
I'm going to read your piece and there's going to be a tiny little alien invasion at the end and I'll go, that makes sense now.
There is an alien. I will be very impressed if you can spot them.
Is it like an obscure reference?
Yes. I think I've got every picture in there, so hopefully. But we're not doing mine first, we're doing Izzy's first.
Yes, I really like the prompt of the star. And I was on the phone to my parents and my dad said, make sure you're studying. So this piece will hopefully prove that I am studying so that my dad doesn't have to worry about it, because you guys might be able to spot a hidden play that's influencing this. So, fade in. Interior. Studio. Day. The traditionally beautiful Stacey Jo, 30s, smiles at the camera. The bright lighting fails to find a single wrinkle. Her grey blazer elevates her red floor-length dress. Behind her is a screen that plays a compilation of classic on-screen kisses. Han and Leia, Edward and Bella, John and Egret, etc.
Ever watched a love scene so beautiful that your heart just melts? Maybe that's because sparks are flying between the actors on screen too. I'm Stacey Jo, and here are my top 10 on-screen couples who are dating in real life.
The compilation switches to Mia Hamm and Adam Demme staring at each other. Rain drenches the pair as they stand in the middle of a road, surrounded by black, parked cars. Adam puts a hand around her waist.
You all cried at last week's episode of The Dreamer, where Bea finally admitted her feelings to Augustus. But in real life, Adam Demme and his co-star Mia Hamm have had no troubles falling in love.
Mia stands on tiptoes as Adam pulls her into a kiss. Stacey's gossip fades out as the sound of rain comes in.
It's rumored that Mia auditioned for the role when she found out Adam was playing Augustus. I mean, who wouldn't try to get close to this dreamboat? Other sources say this pair had so much chemistry on set, they just had to...
Exterior. Street movie set. Day. Mia and Adam continue their kiss in the street. Adam runs his hands through her hair, knocking a frizzy lock in front of her face.
Cut. Take 5.
The two split apart and a runner turns the rain off. Stage lights, sound desks and camera crew fill the scene. Mia runs into the towel her hairstylist holds out for her. The stylist wraps Mia's frizzy locks around curlers and mists them with hairspray.
Oh, you had me in tears.
I like crying myself. Knowing Gus, he'll probably need another 10 more takes.
Adam grabs his phone from the camera woman behind Mia on the side of the street.
Is that so bad? My first shoot took 20 takes.
This isn't my first shoot.
Adam isn't convinced as he sits next to her. Gus glares at Mia from his director's seat.
Doing anything after work?
Takeaway of Lucas?
Mia turns to her stylist.
I smudged my eyeshadow, didn't I?
Adam furrows his eyebrows at Gus.
Not really. I'll get April to have a look.
Eyes fixated on Mia and Adam, Gus stands up from his chair. Interior. Theo's office. Day. Lisa places a tray full of tea and biscuits to Theo's desk, kisses her partner's cheek, and sits next to him. Adam pours Mia a drink, then himself. He dunks the biscuit into his tea. We're getting married tomorrow.
Congratulations.
It's not hard, falling in love.
Took me seconds.
So I heard. There's a knock at the door and Lucas enters holding a sack of parcels. He hands the top parcel to Gus, then sees Mia.
Thought you were on set today. Me too.
Gus opens the parcel. It's a stack of magazines with Lucas and Mia holding hands on the front cover. The headlines all follow the same story. Is Mia Hearn cheating on the dreamer star Adam Demi?
Interesting.
Love a bit of screenplay. Okay, you said this is based off a play and I cannot guess it. What is the play, Izzy?
Well, that's just the opening of a play that's going to be about Mia is supposed to be paired up with Adam because it will do the show a lot of good in terms of publicity, but actually she wants to date Lucas instead. Later, a fan will come running on set, and this is a fan of Adam. Are you getting it yet?
Are you sure I've read the play?
And then all of the characters end up running away so that they can kind of explore the love interest that they want to explore.
Midsummer Night's Dream.
There we go.
Oh, I see. I was reading that this morning. How did I not get that?
I have said it a little bit before the play starts, because the play starts with Theseus, who I've made Theo, saying, now on our nuptial hour or something, prenuptial hour or something like
That's really annoying that I didn't guess that.
Because I was trying to mix, because I was reading Midsummer Night's Dream for a module in Shakespeare, and then obviously there was the prompt of a star, so I was thinking, how could Midsummer Night's Dream sort of apply to celebrities and media and the sort of pressures that they have to sort of produce gossip so that they can publicise themselves, basically.
I mean, there is, and I know this from this morning, the amount of cosmic imagery in a Midsummer Night's Dream. Like, if you go on the first page of Midsummer Night and see how many times the word moon shows up. I think it's about six.
I'm looking through it now. Yeah, you're right.
We love a bit of moonshine.
Yeah, they have the character moonshine coming up. So I wanted to write that and explore it. And I was kind of researching how to open it. And in my research, it came up with one of those top 10 videos about celebrities who are actually dating in real life. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to do a parody of that. And I messaged Bella on the chat saying, can you do an American accent? And she could.
Well, no. I think you'll find my response was not very well, but I can do it if you want me to. I tried to do an American accent for a character I'm playing on one of Erin's audio play podcasts and was told to discontinue my American accent because it was verging on Australian.
I didn't tell you to discontinue.
No,
I...
you didn't tell me. You didn't tell me. Alex told me to discontinue.
I believe it was that the emotion would be transferred clearer in your normal, yeah, beautiful voice.
But also Alex said that I sounded Australian, so I should discontinue it, which was probably for the best.
You guys don't watch Supernatural, but on one of the later seasons where they started running out of monsters, the villains for the piece are just the British. What's ironic is that they have British actors in the main cast, but all the characters who were playing British characters were not British. And they all drank tea out of China mugs and said tally ho, and it was hilarious.
Oh my god.
Anyway.
Speaking of not being British, Erin is British, as far as I know.
That was a tenuous segue, but I'm going to let you have it.
Erin is British, and she has a poem.
It's a weird abstract poem I wrote when I was very tired, so I guess that sort of worked. I picked a mystery genre, so this is meant to be in an interview room. I don't know if that was entirely clear. If you guys can spot all the images, I will be very impressed. Okay. Have we done this before? No, he says as he sits. We haven't. Have you been offered a glass of water? There are two full glasses on the table before me. Tell me from the beginning, he says. What can you remember? Just pieces? They don't make sense. That's fine. Whenever you're ready. Have we done this before? I remember the compass. It didn't face north. Were you following a compass? No. And anyway, it was broken. What else? What else? What else? What else? What else? A shooting star across a deep sky. A face that wasn't mine. A learner sign in headlights, streetlights, blacklights. Have we done this before? There were windows sealed against the sky. A woman in a blue skirt. Champagne. You were in a plane? No. You were on a train? No. A sigh. A straightening of a tie with manicured nails. Would you like a glass of water? How long have I been here? Days. I don't feel hungry. A frown, the scribble of a pen. Why would you feel hungry? He sits. No, we haven't done this before. No, I'm not a new person. I'm the same one as before. Would you like a glass of water? You've changed your suit. I went home. Can I go home? Where is home? Honeysuckles growing wild and scrubbed kitchen tiles and a shell on a windowsill. But an address. Do you have an address or a name? I remember creatures crawling to the sea, their wings stuck together in the humid air. I remember the cliff tops, the long grass, the sand in my shoes. What was the name of the beach? I remember corridors that ended in walls and the sound of footsteps in an empty room. Yes, that's what you need to remember. Focus on that. Who else was there? Wet paint and soggy mops and brand new signs on the doors. Yes, but who was there? We need you to remember. We need more evidence. Would you like a glass of water? Let's try again from the top. Stop fidgeting. Someone must be looking for you. No one is. How do you know? Can I have a glass of water?
I really liked that.
My real question for you is, did you spot the alien?
I was looking so hard for the alien. Where did you hide it?
I was going to say creatures crawling to the sea, but I don't know.
That was the turtle, but you were very close.
Oh.
There was a shooting star against the deep sky, a face that wasn't mine. That was meant to be the alien.
Oh, okay. A UFO.
Yeah, like in War of the Worlds.
I was trying to get every image in there. So instead of a bee, I had honeysuckles. I didn't have a Ferris wheel. What did I have instead?
A compass.
Compass, yes. I used a compass because it looked like a Ferris wheel.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, where was the compass? And then I thought in my head, oh no, there was like a Ferris wheel that looked like a compass. That's probably what she was going for. Which
to be fair,
really
cool. I did think it was a compass, but there we go.
The story dice is basically, you can see it on Patreon, it's just like a round thing with spindles coming out of it. So I went Ferris wheel, but like, I can see compass in it.
Awesome.
You're very good at creepy stories.
Yay! Love creepy stories.
You should definitely write poetry more often, Erin. I feel like I don't get to see enough of your poetry.
Funnily enough, Bella, I now have a seminar where I have to submit a poem every week, and I got my first bit of feedback today, and it was terrifying.
Which module is this?
Reading and Writhing.
Oh!
It's a really good module, but I have not written poetry for an assessment since I was about 11, so I walked into the class today with, like, people that have studied poetry, like, at uni, with my little poem about a blacksmith.
Before I came to uni, I didn't write poetry at all, so when I was doing my personal statement, I then made it my mission to try and write poetry. But speaking of poets, Bella does a lot of poetry.
I do. I was going to say it's strange that we all have different experiences or experience with poetry, because I've been writing poetry consistently since I was about 5, and it was originally my only genre. I didn't write anything else. So yeah, and sadly, despite that amazing segue, I have not brought a poem with me today. I actually kind of decided to do a little flash piece because, well, mostly because I couldn't imagine doing more than a flash piece about this particular topic because I ran out of things to say after the third word. But my piece is about jellyfish, and the things that I kind of incorporated from the dice was that jellyfish are practically the closest thing we have to aliens. Also, I did include a clock in there because whilst Izzy interpreted the dice as a Ferris wheel and Erin interpreted it as a compass, I interpreted it as a clock or a sundial. But yeah, I didn't include everything. I just included some things. And I'll explain why I wrote about jellyfish after. Smoke. Spirals of it, white, spooled beneath the water. All of it drifting east, a swarm of deafness, of blindness on the current. Bump. A bell hits another bell, and, tangled for a moment, they stop to quietly ring. They are like wax half-hardened, warm still to the touch. Street lamps recently outed by the morning light. Limply alive, barely dead. Little floating water plant, small stingfish, dragging its gauzy bows behind it. Knowing nothing but the pinks of its mouth, the tangerines of its feet, the whoosh, the swell, the eddies that embrace it. Suddenly a pillar appears. 2. The bloom flies in all directions out. In one thrum of flesh, the jellies are spinning cogs loose from the clock, their flaccid bodies swirling dumbly, alone. What is this thing? It kicks and shrieks, an unnatural meat thing in the lake. With its breath of glass, it tears their bodies in two. A god, perhaps, or a god's deformity. A violence amongst biological pacifists. A fire in the gentle smoke, with teeth and eyes that roll in its heads. Peaceful creature who knows not the end of peace. Silence that falls to rot on the sand. Drowsy jelly, always dreaming, asleep forevermore, though it knows not the difference between endless rest and endless death.
I love that. There were so many beautiful images in it.
I love how the jellyfish have popped up again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is a reason for that. I'm not obsessed with jellyfish, I swear. I might be a little bit obsessed.
Would you like to explain the reason why?
I was in a creative writing seminar yesterday, actually. We had to come up with a story idea for that seminar, and I got picked on. And the story idea I came up with was a story about jellyfish, but only from the perspective, or sort of the perspective surrounding jellyfish, because the reading that we'd done that week was The Science of Storytelling. And in The Science of Storytelling, William Storr basically says that psychologically, humans are only interested in stories about other humans. So if you write about animals, usually they're anthropomorphized. So I said to my tutor, well, I bet I could write a story about jellyfish and they don't even have brains, and I bet I could get someone to be interested in it. And the seminar continued, and at the end of the seminar, he said to the class, please can you write an opening for next week, an opening of a story that will entice me in. You can write about whatever you want. Except for you, Bella, I want you to write an opening to a jellyfish story, and I want to be enticed by it. So I sort of played myself a little bit there, and here I am with a story about jellyfish from the perspective of the jellyfish, which was incredibly difficult because jellyfish literally don't have brains, they don't have ears, they don't have a heart, they don't have eyes, they don't have... They can't really perceive anything. It was very abstract when I wrote it. It was very confusing. And then the humans that are actually in the piece aren't described like you would usually describe humans. They're pillars, which is their legs, or meat things, which I feel like a meat thing sometimes, usually when I first wake up in the morning.
Oh, we all feel like meat things, Bella.
We all feel like meat things sometimes.
I'd be very scared if I was just like blobbing about my own home and suddenly some people's legs just burst through the ceiling, just had a little swim.
But that's the fascinating thing about jellyfish, is they don't know. Like, it's happening and they're dying because of it, but they can't actually perceive any of those things, which is so strange to me that they're called, because they're called jellyfish, right? But they're not actually fish. They're like coral or anemones. They're not plants either. But they aren't fish.
My question for you, Bella, is what would happen in this story?
Mm. I'm not gonna lie. I'm gonna be honest with you, Erin. not a lot. There would be probably, because I specifically decided to write about the jellyfish of Palau again, which are the jellyfish in the basin who no longer have a sting because they've adapted that way. And so when I was talking to my tutor about it, it was the sort of idea that we kind of threw around, was the idea that these jellyfish have adapted to be a non-violent community in a way. Even if they're not aware whether they would be a violent or a non-violent community, they've almost by evolution become a non-violent society. So I kind of wanted to play on jellyfish just through writing about a jellyfish's perspective, teaching humanity about non-violence. But other than that, I don't really think a lot would happen other than a lot of floating. Like, I'm not... Because the thing is with jellyfish is they can't really swim either. Don't ask me why I know so much about jellyfish, but they can't swim either. They kind of just follow the current, but they can move minorly with their, when they sort of move their mouth parts, but they otherwise can't really move. So they're sort of subject to the things that happen around them. So it would be a lot of what is happening around the jellyfish rather than the jellyfish themselves. Because if it was just writing about the jellyfish themselves, this piece would have been one word and it would have been float.
Bella, can we have a movie night where I show you that one Star Trek movie where they have to save a whale, and that's the only point of the movie, is they have to save a whale?
Yes, you can. I would Wonderful. Love to see that.
I want
to
see the story of someone going too far out to sea, finding a pacifist jellyfish and using it to help it float, and the jellyfish is just sort of happy to be of assistance.
I don't think that would work very well. Jellyfish can't swim. So if they've got a human dragging them down, likelihood is the jellyfish which, by the way, is not doesn't have any bones or muscles. It's just a floating piece of gelatinous, like, flesh. Would probably just sink immediately.
That's an adventure.
That would be a very short story of a guy clambering into the sea and hooking himself onto a jellyfish and then immediately drowning.
I'd like to put my vote forward for the name of this episode being the gelatinous flesh.
My story from that is, right, guy jumps into sea, is, oh no, I can't swim, grabs onto jellyfish goes down, jellyfish now has a new depth of sea to explore, jellyfish then witnesses the entirety of Finding Nemo, boom, that's a blockbuster.
Jellyfish, again, this kind of defeats the object of the jellyfish story, because the jellyfish can't witness anything. The jellyfish would just float to the bottom and then exist at the bottom.
What do they eat?
Plankton and other plant float things.
Do you think jellyfish are relaxed?
I think that they aren't anything. And I feel like because they aren't anything, they are therefore by default relaxed. If you can't feel anything, see anything, hear anything, are you therefore content?
Welcome to Prompted, where we ask the deep so questions. Deep. Tune in next week where we debate about whether turtles have a sense of right or wrong. Speaking of things that float contentedly, let's contentedly float onto the next topic, which is...
I love that.
Just how to open a story. So where to begin? Where to begin with this topic, guys?
The story openings I always genuinely hate are the ones where they're like, hey, there's no happy ending to be found in this trilogy / book series / TV series / movie. And then you listen to it and you expect a happy ending and then there isn't one. And you remember what a fool you were to forget the first bit.
But yes, because I just watched the lecture because I am doing my work, Dad. And she said of how in every single Shakespeare play, the whole play is summed up in the first line. Because that's what it's all about. Like, with the example of Midsummer Night's Dream. Now, fair Hippolyta, our nuptial hour draws on apace. The whole play is about weddings and love and all of that stuff. Yeah, Romeo and Juliet is literally just, here's a synopsis of my play. They die.
I was going to say, was Erin just throwing shade at a series of unfortunate events?
It was a series of unfortunate events and Darren Chan and possibly being human. And I'm trying to think of others. There are so many others.
You don't like those kind of openings.
I respect the fact that they're there. I hate the fact that at the end of them, I've always forgotten the fact that they told me there wasn't a happy ending. And then I'm irritated at myself for not seeing it coming. Because I like happy endings and I never get them anymore.
I don't like the film Ex Machina because it references the plot device, Deus Ex Machina, and it basically then tells you in the film title how the film ends, because it's saying, oh, this film is going to be about a problem that's impossible and no one can solve, and then obviously abruptly gets resolved by a weird twist, and I don't like that.
I mean, I assumed it was because Ex Machina means the machine, but you've now drawn attention to another thing which has told me there's not going to be a happy ending, which I didn't realise, so thank you for that, I'll add it to the list. That'll go on to Darren Chan.
It doesn't mean there's going to necessarily be an unhappy ending, but it's like, oh, this thing is suddenly resolved by this unlikely thing.
Also, hot tip, don't watch Ex Machina with your parents, which is what I made the mistake of doing. Not a family film, everyone.
Do you know what also isn't a family series that I tried to watch with my parents?
Game of Thrones?
I'm quite a sex-positive person, and I started watching Euphoria with my parents, which I had already seen before. Like, it's a really good series, and I love Euphoria. However, my brain didn't quite make the connection in my mind that it was probably not the best thing to watch with my mom and dad. It's quite graphic in certain scenes, and we had to turn it off, so that was nice.
The joys.
The joys.
I like the opening of The Great Gatsby. Well, I say I like. I hated it in the first read-through when I was reading it because I had to, because I was studying it. But then as I studied it, it sort of got smarter. Basically, the first line from Fitzgerald is, in my younger and more vulnerable days, my father gave me some advice that I've been turning in my head ever since. And the advice is for the narrator character to not judge anyone. And so he starts off the story by saying, you know what, guys, I'm not going to judge anyone because it's mean. My dad said not to. And then throughout the entirety of the book, it's just him judging people.
That was, someone described that idea to me as Nick slapping the audience with a wet fish. Guys, am I speaking nonsense? I've had so much coffee and I think it's just stopped working.
I just heard wet fish and was very confused for a second.
The prompted gang are in university term. Very tired.
My favourite opening is actually the opening of a poem. It's called Howl, and it's by Allen Ginsberg, and I'm sure everyone knows the opening, or might not, I don't know, I'm just assuming, I think, because I'm assuming because everyone in my creative writing would know the opening. It's a brilliant poem.
It's a great poem.
And the opening is, I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked. Gets less PG from there, so I'm going to stop that.
It's a poem that is designed to offend people and say, why on earth are you finding this offensive?
Well, my favourite thing about the poem is I also have Howl on Trial, which is, it documents the trial that Allen Ginsberg was then put on. It was an obscenity trial, and the prosecution brought in loads of English and literature professors to say to them, oh, this poem is clearly about communism and homosexuality, which we don't like, and blah, blah, blah. Tell us about this poem, like, explain to us this poem, blah, blah, blah. And then those English and literature professors then sat down on the stand and went, I can't tell you what this poem is about. It's a poem. It's how you interpret it. Checkmate.
That's amazing.
And basically helped Allen Ginsberg win the trial because they were like, look, it's a poem. It's a brilliant poem, but I can't tell you what it's about. Who knows? And it's like, yes. So this is from Howl on Trial. Basically, someone asked the person on the stand if they could translate what the poem was trying to say. And the person on the stand said, no, the words mean only in their context, I would say, and I can't possibly translate, nor am I sure can anyone in the room translate the opening part of this poem into rational prose. It cannot be done, nor can it be done with any poetry. A sonnet of Shakespeare's cannot be translated into rational prose without becoming an entirely different thing. Yep, there you go.
That is very cool.
We love literature professors.
The trial is beautiful. I love reading books and poems that used to be banned for random reasons. Because it's like, why do people ever think that this is horrible?
It is ridiculous that there was an obscenity trial about it. Like, there obviously wouldn't be now, but it's like, back then it was the 50s and everyone had a stick up their behinds.
Is that the technical term, Bella?
Don't worry. I restrained myself. Don't worry.
I'm very proud of you.
But when I write, I like opening things by obviously establishing the character that you've got. So that's why when I wrote this Midsummer Night's Dream opening to a screenplay, I didn't open with the original thesis line because I wanted to kind of have more of a focus on my Mia character, who's aligned with Hermia, because that you need to set up perspective by opening up with people. Sometimes it works to have a random sort of flashback, but I think it's much stronger just to say, right, this is the character, you should care about this person now. We're going to see what happens to them.
I have a habit of opening with a piece of dialogue. In my most recent project, I opened for a piece that I was writing with, I don't want to have sex with you.
I mean, it draws your attention.
And then immediately like, whoa, 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 hang on. Why? And it turns out the piece is just set in a garden and a guy who fully well knows the person who's saying it has just walked into the house to ask if the other character wants some fruit, and she's just sat up and just said to him, I don't want to have sex with you. And he's like, wait, why, whoa, whoa, I've just come offering melon. But that's the start of the piece.
I vary my openings. I can't think of a definite one I do. One that I did recently, which was a lot of fun, is the podcast that Bella was doing a American accent in for the rehearsals. It was someone trying to like write a report, but they were doing it verbally into a recorder, and they just kept getting interrupted every few lines by a new character coming in the door. So it was quite a cool way of being like, look, this is how many people are in this podcast, this is how many are in a very confined space, and this is how annoying they all are to each other. So that was fun. I did enjoy writing that, and I did enjoy recording that, because watching people wait for their cues and then springing into character is always lovely to see.
I did really like that, and I even created a TikTok about that podcast, which was funny. I had so much fun making it.
The TikTok was glorious.
What about you, Izzy?
I'm trying to think now. I always like to open... well, it's the opening always... I don't know whether Erin gets the same, because Erin also writes lots and lots of plays and things. How I want to open my story defines as to whether I'm going to write it as a play or in prose. Because it's basically just... I ask myself, how much dialogue do I need in my opening? If it's a lot, then I go, ah, I'll do it as a play. And then if it's not a lot, it ends up being prose. But I like starting something, yeah, with the main character, but with them kind of in action a little bit. So they're doing something. I don't really like them being just in a house or in like an office or something. I like them trying to, I like to try to get them into an interesting location, because then I think it says a lot about a character who is in a bowling alley, or a character who's sort of located in a museum or an art gallery, as opposed to someone who's just sat in generic room number 12. I like setting people up like that. And as sort of we've talked about in the first episode of the series, I also like doing things where something has just happened beforehand and you kind of got to work out what it is and work out all the context in it. A little bit like what I did in this piece. I opened it by having the YouTube person talk about the relationship that Adam and Mia have been sort of pretending to have or are supposed to have. I kind of have the readers working out what the context is. Before openings, you need an idea. So how do you guys like to come up with prompts, and what prompts do you like to use? Because we used quite a different one this time. We use a sort of more visual one, but then we also usually use things like sentences and stuff like that. So what do you guys think?
I had some interesting ones this week, actually, that I noted down. I think my favourite one that I've got a lot of inspiration from my housemate, Gray, recently. And Gray and I were in the Sainsbury's because we'd accidentally missed a few things off our online shop. We were going in to get some milk, and of course I'd missed my weekly essential of white wine, so I needed to get some of that. And we went into the Sainsbury's and I picked up white wine and I thought, oh, I'll just grab some like vegan cheese as well. And Gray got their milk. And as we were shuffling along Sainsbury's together with wine, cheese and milk, I turned to Gray and said, kind of looks like we're a couple preparing for a date night / buying essentials for our house. And Gray turned to me and very seriously said, just a couple of queers and their dietary requirements. And it... I wet myself in the middle of the Sainsbury's because that was so funny to me. And then they went, what? It's very nearly true. And I was like, no, Gray, it's entirely true. We are both queer and we both have dietary requirements. I just don't like how very casually you said that in front of many old women in the Sainsbury's. So that was a great prompt I came up with, but I don't know if we'd actually be able to use that.
That would be a difficult
as
one.
A prompt. Also, we're all black holes on this blessed day was another one someone said to me, and I really liked that as a prompt as well.
Where did that come from?
I don't remember. Someone said it in my house. Basically, my house is a hub for interesting prompts.
Some quotes I really do want to use are quotes from Dungeons & Dragons, because the stuff you say on that is ridiculous. So I've got a list on the group chat for you, Izzy.
We actually do, we put just a little plug for our Patreon, but we do release our prompts a week early on our Patreon so that our patrons can basically look at the prompts and write pieces and have time to submit them. So if you guys are interested in getting lots of early prompts and submitting to the show, then that could be a good idea.
Send them in. Send us your writing.
There was some, on Erin's sort of point about D&D, there was some interesting ones from our group D&D session. My D&D character, Mama Toadie, just said to the group, Mama Toadie casts Shalala and starts whacking the dragon post-death. So the dragon was dead, but Mama Toadie was just whacking this dragon. And then opens up what appears to be an ink bottle and pours her urine over the dragon that she was keeping in the ink bottle. Yeah, you'll never know why she had urine in an ink bottle, but she did.
Did she have any ink?
No, she dumped the ink out and peed into the ink bottle so that she would have pee on her instead of ink. And I will never reveal to you why. Well, it's probably obvious, but basically, Mama Toadie does a lot of water spells, and I'd convinced the DM that rather than having a drop of water do my water spells, I could have a drop of urine if I so wished.
I mean, that makes sense.
He wouldn't let me do a urine tidal wave, though. He would only let me do shape water with it. He wouldn't let me do a tidal wave of urine, unfortunately.
Who say that the DM is Alex, who is a prompted regular.
Yes.
And has a big fat fan base.
Yes, Alex is the DM.
So of course Alex would let you use that for water spells.
Well, he wasn't going to at first. I asked if I could have a urine tidal wave, and he said, well, no, because that would be horrifying. And I said, okay, fair enough. And then I said, well, can I do shape water with the urine? And Alex went, no. And I went, well, hang on a minute. Last session, you let me waterboard someone with sewage, so you've got to have consistency in this campaign. So he said, you're right, Bella. You've called me out on that one. You can have the urine to shape water with. So there you go.
That's how you're defeating Alex.
With logic, clearly.
Speaking of clear logic, it's logical that we should end the show now because we're coming up to the end of our recording time. So yeah, so thanks so much to all of our writers on today's show. I enjoyed both your pieces loads and loads. And thank you so much to everyone for listening. To support us, subscribe to our Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/promptedwritingpodcast for bonus content and shout-outs at the end of the show. And our YouTube, which is Prompted Writing Podcast, which we launched last week, and that's just gone amazing. So thanks so much for that, guys. And be sure to leave us a review telling us what you think on the platforms that you're on, and comment and all of that stuff. For more prompts and writing, find us on Instagram on @promptedwritingpodcast. And thank you so much again for listening.